You went to test sound levels, and I thought it was you trying to get the cat to come up and jump on your lap. It took me a minute to
No,
realize that
that
you
was me trying to get the cat away from the cord, the cord, so he doesn't try and jump up and grab him again.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Flat Nickel Podcast. I am your host, Hannah Nawa, joined by my always producer and occasional co-host, and my very delightful and very snuggly cat, Alexi. Oh, that's adorable.
So now the cat's the producer and co-host?
You know what?
Did I get fired?
If the cat wanted to be the producer and co-host, I would let him because based off of how adorable his face is alone, like he would just get us all the well, no, it's an audio podcast, so no one would know what his face looks
Yeah, we
like.
would get zero listeners due to a cat being on it.
After our ramble about my very delightful cat, I am going to introduce the fact that this episode of the Flat Nickel Podcast is with Pocket Vinyl, which we drove from Cleveland to Shippensburg, slept in Shippensburg overnight, and then drove up to New Hampshire to see a concert. And then after New Hampshire, went down to Connecticut to interview Eric and Elizabeth from Pocket Vinyl. Pocket Vinyl is a bit different than the other artists that we've interviewed because they are a unique performance duo, a husband and wife. During their set, Eric sings and plays piano, and Elizabeth creates a live original painting on stage. They're really great people. They're good friends of ours. Sam was actually with me the night that they performed at the Thought Lot, and that was really cool because Sam ended up being pretty big fans in the end.
Yeah, seeing it live I think was absolutely amazing because you shift back and forth between the music being played and the art being displayed, if we're trying to rhyme. And it's just really cool the how what the end product is and how you sort of experience emotions while watching this art being created right in front of you. Super unique act that is by no means is it a gimmick. It's really just truly their art form, and they do it really well.
It's one of those things that if you stumble across them, like if you were to stumble across one of their shows, it would probably be one of those once in a lifetime experiences. But in Connecticut, in their home, we were able to sit down with Eric and Elizabeth, and we had an absolutely amazing discussion. I think in this episode, you can kind of tell that, you know, we're all friends and we were sitting around their dining room table and drinking tea and just having a really great, I'm so happy with how this interview turned out. I loved sitting down and talking with them. I feel like they had so much to say and so many great stories and such a great perspective on their careers and a lot of really great advice for other musicians that are just getting started. And with that being said, let's get into our interview with Pocket Vinyl.
We just had blueberry popsicles.
Oh.
Elizabeth makes them.
Like actual blueberries
Yeah,
in them.
we were just like doing smoothies, and then we would have too much smoothie and stuff, and so I'd stick it in the popsicle thing, and so it's literally just like frozen fruit and juice, and they're so good,
Oh my
and they
gosh.
feel like they taste like they're full of sugar, and there's no sugar in them at all. It's kind of
This
super
might
fun.
be the lead-in for the episode.
Yeah, no,
Just pick us up right there.
if I didn't have, I'm gonna just keep talking about this because now I'm interested. Fruit. I've been doing fruit and coconut water and
Oh,
chia seeds, and that's been like my go-to. Just
like smoothie.
blitz it up,
Yep.
and it's more like a little slush type thing. But if I can get that extra 3 grams of protein in there, I'm gonna go for it. That's been my job. This actually, we started the Matt Wheeler interview talking about food too, because we were talking about on. Food on the road.
Yeah.
And I remember that was
Oh,
something
yeah.
that came up in your guys' documentary. It was talking about you're obviously very health conscious and you
We
have
try to be,
you
yeah, it's
know
hard.
some restrictions. Can you guys talk a little bit about what you do when you're on the road constantly, what you do for because a lot of times we're not sponsored by Metamucil, but my mother likes it when I bring it up. We hear a lot like you gotta take Metamucil because it's a lot of bread. It's a lot of for most people it's a lot
Right.
of pizza and
Yeah.
burgers and
Well,
fast
yeah,
food.
that's what we were finding when we were just if we got food anywhere, it was like burgers, pizza, cookies. Like sometimes there would be times
On like the
we
first
would
few
have
tours.
dinner and it was cookies for dinner, and that's it because that's what was available at the venue, and
there wasn't time to go get anything else, and like food is expensive.
It was free. Yeah, like
free.
It's usually
and
the free stuff is often the worst
we,
stuff for
past
you.
Past couple of years, we've been gluten-free, and that helps cut way down on bread. And so then what we do is we try to supplement that with a ton of fresh fruits and vegetables in the car. So if we're at, or like nuts and seeds and granola bars, but if we're at a venue and they're like, oh, you each get like a pizza, they'll just run out to the car and like eat some raw broccoli and granola bars and just deal that way.
Sometimes we will, especially I feel like towards the latter part of a tour, we'll just be like, we have some dietary restrictions, but none of them are severe. They're mostly by choice, just for...
They just make us feel terrible for 24 hours.
Yeah, it's like gluten-free, for example. Neither of us are celiac or anything, but we've just found we feel better when we avoid
the car is less
stuff.
Stinky.
Yes, I fart a lot less in the like metal box that I travel around in with my wife, and I want her to continue like me, so... but everyone, like, especially towards the end of a tour, someone's like, hey, free pizza. And I'm just, like, hungry and tired. And just like, okay. I'll just eat it. And then it's a few hours of unpleasantness. And then we're fine after.
Is there something, I imagine you guys mostly hit up grocery stores.
Yeah, we try to do Aldi's the most because it's so cheap. Yep. So, and thankfully they've been expanding. A new one that we just discovered is Lidl. It's on the southeast coast.
Yeah.
And it's the competitor to Aldi. It's also from Germany, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's twice the size, and it just has, like, a lot more options, and that's really...
It's kind of exactly like Aldi's, just bigger.
Yeah.
And...
But they only have a few. Like, I think their headquarters is near D.C., and then it's, like, south of D.C. They have a handful of, maybe, like, 40 stores or something.
They have a lot more, like, non-food stuff, too. Like you know, like, underwear of... things you've never heard. The one thing I always think about when I think of is, you know, it's like just off-brand stuff, but there was one, it was a onesie male pajama thing that they
like
had. It was
johns.
Like $5, but I loved that on the cover, the model was an old Asian guy.
Yeah,
he was a beautiful model.
He wasn't like
still,
a young, you know, like a young, like, attractive, muscly guy that you would expect to see on the cover.
I think he was still attractive, but he was like 40 or 50 years old.
Yeah,
just like wearing this.
Yeah, he was like onesie model.
I think about that man often. I love the fact that someone was like, yeah, he's the face of this pajama onesie.
That's our marketing guy.
Yeah, exactly.
When you guys tour, I know you play shows in Canada.
We have only done one show in Canada so far.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mostly I think it's just we don't have the connections in Canada at the moment.
Yeah, and we haven't taken the time to get them.
Like, I think we could easily enough. I'm Canadian, so it's not, like, when we did the one show, even it wasn't a problem going over the border at all. But we just haven't made the effort to do a lot.
It feels like every few years... I hear about the laws changing between, for like small musicians like us to, in terms of playing what, like, some, like a few years ago, you really needed documents, then it kind of came out that like the laws changed. So then you really didn't. And it, I don't know. It just, there's a lot of prickliness there that I just kind of, I've avoided dealing with so far, but the one we did was fine. That was kind of like a test.
Mm-hmm.
And that went well. Yeah, I mean, we should tour Canada.
Yeah, we've been talking about it for years. We just haven't gotten around to it.
Yeah.
We just interviewed, or the episode that went up yesterday, mm-hmm. was Matt Wheeler, who's from Lancaster, which is near where we're from.
Yeah.
And he's been playing a lot of shows in Canada through so far.
Oh, cool.
Has been, like, his big thing, which
yeah.
I was kind of surprised because I don't really think of so far as being accessible.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like,
no.
Yeah, it always feels like it's a little bit, because they are very particular, which is
mm-hmm.
totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
The right
I think it's
be.
Probably one
it's
of those
so
things where once you get in, you can get access to a lot.
Yeah.
And we haven't done any so far.
Yeah, I've tried to reach out to them, and I never hear back. So I don't know if we're just not their thing, which could very well be
or
the
case.
Or
it could just be the, you know, whoever happens to, because it's all like individuals,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
They're all like independent, like almost
mm-hmm.
franchises, like...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know, but...
Where do you guys tour typically, then? Do you have a certain part of the country that you...
I'd say we probably hit up the entire eastern half of the country the most. We've gone to the West Coast twice, just twice?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, from like, kind of the Rocky Mountain
yeah,
line.
Yeah, from like the Rocky Mountains up and down and everything.
Everything,
on the east.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, right now I'm working on our fall tour, which is we're going kind of like up through the northern Midwest and the Dakotas, then down to Denver and you know, back through Kansas and stuff. And we just finished up a tour a few months ago of down the East Coast and
up to Michigan.
Yeah, it's something about like, you know, half of the country we can do. When you get past that, there's a lot of dead areas.
Yeah,
very
and we
few
also
venues.
Try to be out for around a month at a time and then back home.
Yeah.
Just like yes, yeah, because we have the cats and stuff, we just like to see them a little bit more regularly.
Well, and two, it's just we're trying to have some more longevity and we find that the 2 month tours can be they're a bit harder to get through now than they were 5 years ago, which I think is just a sign of aging a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a lot of repeat venues that you have on your tour?
Oh, I'd say at least half.
Yeah, at least half are repeat venues.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of venues are those? Because obviously, for our listeners that don't really know what you guys do, you're a bit different than most
mm-hmm.
groups that we're going to be interviewing mm-hmm. because you play and sing for 90 minutes, right? Thereabouts?
I mean, it depends. Anywhere from 30 to 90, we say, depending on what the...
And Elizabeth paints a live original painting in front of the audience, which is really incredible because seeing live music alone is watching art be made in front of you, but then we're also having a painting be made in front of us. And it's just an incredible thing to have both of those things at the exact same time.
Thank you.
But obviously, it's a little bit different. And I think you guys have referenced that before, that sometimes venues don't quite understand what they're getting when they book you.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think sometimes when we're booking new venues, they might have a harder time understanding it. But if they're willing to take the chance on us, they will typically have us back. And so I would say like some of our best venues are anything. Like some of our best venues are house shows. Some of our best venues are coffee shops. Some are bars. Some are art galleries. Like there's like this, the Franklin Marshall College in Lancaster, they are really great with us. And that's, you know, we play in a theater there. And then there's like this kind of, you know, a dive bar down in South Carolina that we always play at, and we do really well there. So it's just, I think it's once the people who own the venue see us, then they see that we can kind of fit in with whatever they have going on too.
Well, and often I think they often say like, oh, okay, I get it now.
Yeah.
Like you can explain.
You
like...
can explain it all day, but it's really, you have to see it to really know what's going on.
Yeah, and often, a lot of times, our second show at a place is, I mean, it's true for a lot of bands, but, like, it's often better than the first because the venue kind of knows how to talk about it, too,
mm-hmm.
like, with other people. And yeah, I think there's only, I think most of the time, if we don't return to a venue, it's our choice because we haven't liked the venue, or they close down or something, which is, I mean, that's a huge issue.
Yeah, it's a lot of turnover.
Yeah, with just this job is that at this level, just bars and coffee shops and even just house venues or people running house shows, they, you know, they move out, their lives change and they just stop doing those things. And
yeah.
So it's, you know, you go on one tour in the spring and then in the fall, like any, like some of the connections you got in the spring are depleted because
mm-hmm.
just things change.
Well, especially if it's like a college town, like we love playing college towns, but
yeah.
a lot of times it's students, even if it's like a non-college run venue. A lot of times it's still students that are doing the booking and they graduate and leave. And so then we need to figure out who the new students are to book us.
Yeah. And if we don't, then it, like that dries up. We've had some college towns where we'll like play them for like 2 or 3 years. We like found like a bunch of people come out and stuff and then they graduate and like new people didn't really come in that time. And then we've like tried playing there again and like no one comes to the shows and we're like, oh, okay, maybe we're done in this town.
Does one of you do the booking and logistics?
I pretty much handle all the logistics behind it.
But when you're sending booking emails, how do you describe what you do?
I think the exact line I say, our live show consists, because we have albums and stuff which are all full band, but it's just the two of us live. I say, like, our live show consists of a one-man piano band, or I say a piano slammer. Those are two, one of those two things. And I, like, in parentheses, I say, like, that's me. And an onstage painter named Elizabeth, who creates a masterpiece on stage during the performance, which we then auction off to the highest bidder at every show. But you, and then usually like a sentence after that that says we would describe our music as piano slam rock. And that's, and then here's a link to music or whatever. Then here are the dates, you know, just try to keep it as simple as possible. But I actually focus usually on the painting part. And I tell too, when I'm talking with venues and we get a show, I usually try to tell them, hey, when you're talking to people or like posting on your website, focus on the live art. Because, I mean, as much as we're proud of our music, there are so many bands out there and so many, you know, just musical experiences that are great. But the live art is the part that...
Yeah, we try to pull in people that might not normally go out to see a piano band.
Yeah.
Like, would you watch a painting, though? Maybe you would come see that?
Well, I think it's just more inherently interesting, too. Because, you know, like, I mean, you'll hear... I'm sure you get... tons of things that are like, oh, hey, this band is playing here, this band is playing here. No matter where you live, that's always happening. But
we're just trying to set ourselves apart, get a little bit more attention.
Yeah. And I think often people, I like to think that they come because they, if they're like checking us out for the first time, come because they hear about the live art thing. And then while they're watching the show, they think to themselves, oh, the music's pretty good too. And then they enjoy that part of it, like, you know, come for the art, stay for the art and music.
With your guys, when you guys are performing, what level of coordination do you guys have with each other? Because you're two sort of art forms acting independently yet together. Mm-hmm. You know, do you guys talk back and forth on, you know, the pace of the painting or what you're going to play next? I assume you probably go into it with a set list. You don't just make it up on the fly.
Yeah, so he'll make a set list for the show. So it's usually a little bit different every show. But then he gives me the set list, and so I can see exactly, you know, how many songs left to complete the painting. And I just try to keep track so that I know I have enough time to finish it. And then I try to not paint when he's not playing. So that it's very much like when the music starts, the painting starts. If the music is not happening and Eric's talking... I try not, if I feel like I'm pressed for time, I might, you know.
Yeah, if we're doing like a half hour show or something, you really gotta,
And how does, I mean, time wise, how do you pace yourself painting? My biggest fear if I were in your shoes would be, so, you know, stage fright or not stage fright. What's the word I'm looking for?
Like not finishing?
Yeah. Drawing a blank while you're on stage, you know?
I think it's more just like an adrenaline kicks in, takes over. I just don't stop. If I stop, I just don't stop. I just paint. And I found it really helpful because I majored in art in college, and a lot of my friends who are also art majors, they don't paint anymore because there's nothing telling them to. There's no professors, you know, there's no deadlines telling them to paint. And so it's really great for me to have, this is like a very small, like an assignment that I have to do in this 45 minutes. And if I don't do it, the show is ruined. It's like the show must go on type of a thing. It helps, I think, that my back is to the audience. So I'm not seeing them react. I'm just like, it's me and the painting and then Eric off to the side. And that's all I've got.
It is funny though, there have been times where we're playing to an audience who is attentive yet quiet, and then like, and I'm always like, I'd like to talk in between songs and stuff, and I'll be like playing a song and we'll finish and like it kind of like just like that, just soft clappers or something
shy,
like that.
Shy clappers.
Yeah, and so I'll be like, okay, and I'm interacting with the crowd and I'm looking at people's faces and I can see them smiling back, and then like a few songs in I realize like, okay, they're not very expressive, but I can tell like they're engaged, you know what I mean, on our side. And then we'll finish the show and get off, and Elizabeth's like, oh, that was terrible. I'm like, no, what are you talking about? Everyone was like engaged. She's like, I didn't think anyone was paying attention. Just because of the different perspectives.
Some of those lights are really bad.
It's like a strong red.
Yeah, the red is bad.
When you played at the Thoughtbot, that was one of the things in my head. think we had colored lights.
Yeah, but you had a really good spotlight there, too. And,
so
like, a really bright, like, white spotlight. Yeah, I didn't have any problems there. I do now, I bring a little desk lamp with me that kind of warms the light a little bit so that I can see the colors. But a lot of places they have, like, they'll have, like, red and blue kind of flashing. And those two colors, I don't know if you've ever looked through, like, the 3D red and blue glasses. They just wash out every color.
If you look at, like, one at a time.
Yeah,
especially,
and there have been times where, like, I've asked them to, like, just straight white light, and they can't do it, or they forget, or whatever. And I'm literally painting based on what my paint says on the label. I'm like, oh, I guess this is yellow. I don't know that it's yellow, but it says it's yellow, so I hope it looks good.
I remember one time, I think it was in Kansas.
Yeah.
I remember I saw, we, like, finished there, we're like, thank you, everybody, and the lights went up. And it, like, it, you know, was all flooded with white.
Yeah.
And I saw Elizabeth's face was just like, like, she was just like, oh, that's what it looks like. And it looked, the painting looked great, but she was just like, okay, yeah,
feels,
I was expecting a few different colors.
It feels
colors,
like I'm
but,
painting colorblind sometimes.
Yeah. Well, didn't you have, like, a friend in high school?
Yeah, who was colorblind, and he would he would hold up his paint to whatever he was doing. If he was painting your face, he would hold it up and look at your face and the paint in his hand. Be like, this matches the shade that I see. I don't know if it's correct or not, but I'll just use this. And he actually had really good.
Yeah, did you say he had the best color mixing out of anyone? Because he had to be so particular about it.
Yeah,
but even if the colors were wrong, that's still like an incredible art because it would be
different
from what you would normally expect of the shade differences that you might be able to tell. As far as, I kind of want to circle back a little bit. As far as booking goes for your act, do you feel like the live painting gives you an edge? Like, people become sort of more interested because you're standing out in the crowd? Do people not know what to do with you? And sometimes that's a bit of a downfall.
Probably that. But
wait,
I don't hear about
one?
It. The second. The
oh,
second.
You think so?
The latter. I think, yeah, but I think that's probably what we don't hear about. That's probably if someone's, like, checking us out and they're like, this is, like, we're a dive bar with Mark.
I do wonder if some people think that we're just, like, pretentious hipsters. you know, if you just, like, saw that, you're like, oh, yeah, you do, okay, sure, great, you have a cat that plays on stage, too, all right, whatever.
That would make the act. That's the next tour. You just need to bring the cats with
you.
You're perfect.
Have them run across the keyboard.
I think, yeah, I don't know. I'm sorry, my mind just went blank.
No, you're
what was the question again? Oh, if people know what to do with us, sort
yeah.
of. I think, from what I understand talking with other bands, I think it's more of an asset. Well, one, because I just think we're, I don't know, maybe this is a pretentious hipster thing to say, but I think we're a really good band. And I'm really proud, like, I really like, I'm a fan of our songs. If I wasn't in Pocket Vinyl, I would like Pocket Vinyl. And that's, I try to use that as a gauge with a lot of what we do of, like, what would, if I loved, like, a band I love, what would I want to see them do? Mm-hmm. And then that's like, okay, well, whatever my answer is, that's what we'll try to do, because that's the only really true barometer for what I know, you know, how to figure out. And I think Elizabeth's paintings are like, amazing, and from what I understand of talking with other bands who are booking, it, you know, it's usually, like, the, you know, 2 out of 10 emails that you send out, you get back. That's kind of across the board. But I've heard some bands who say even that's like, whoa, I can't imagine getting 1 out of 10. Like, that'd be so great. And, you know, I think certainly for people who are just like, you know, one person with, especially if it's like one white guy with an acoustic guitar, I can't, that must be very hard to get shows, I assume. I think that's because there's just, that's so many out there. So I think it has helped us a lot. But at the same time, it's, you know, we only hear about the venues that want to work with us.
Yeah.
So I don't know if maybe a lot of people do look at us and they're like, oh, I have no idea what to do with this. And they just never respond.
Probably like 95% of the venues that we play at will have us back. It's very rare. We'll ask a venue if we can come back and they tell us no.
Yeah.
Like, I probably count on one. Is it that one time?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, they just, like, we asked if we'd come back, and they were just like, no, we don't think you guys were a good fit.
That
like,
was
okay.
More for
it was, I think
the
that was
content,
religious reasons.
Yes. Well, we have a few songs that, that explore some of the frustrations with theology. And we both grew up in religious households and stuff. And so it was a place where the people who put it on were part of this church. And we've played in churches. We've played at a lot of theologically driven coffee houses and other things and have been welcomed. And it's just, we're very much in the ask questions type of mindset. But this one place I remember, we like played the show.
It went really well.
Great.
We brought a good amount of fans out. Like, this was packed.
Yeah. It worked out really well. And then the next time I was booking a tour, I like emailed them and I was like, hey, last show was great. Shall we do it again? And they were just like, no. I was like, okay. And at first I was kind of like a little angry. And then I just realized it was just funny. And so, yeah.
One topic that I've noticed that comes up a lot in your writing, especially, is, as you said, exploration, like not only with theology, but I remember when you played at the Thought Lot, you talked about a lot of your songs that you played in a row were exploring sexuality and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's our most recent album.
You know, is that a big driver for, like, as weird as it sounds, is like thought what causes your songwriting? You know, that might be a bad way of asking the question.
You're actually exactly right. There's this quote that Eric likes to think about that bad art answers questions, good art asks questions.
Mm.
Yeah. I think my brother told me that, and he's a visual artist like Elizabeth, and I mean, I think there are some good songs in the world that do answer questions, but I think as a rule of thumb, I think just asking questions is a great way, because in that sense, you're not telling people how to think. You know what I mean? Like, if, I don't know, if you have never liked blueberries your entire life, and I come to you and I'm like, you should like blueberries, you're going to be like, all right, well, whatever, I don't.
And I'm not going to listen to anything you have to say.
Yeah. But if I come to you and say, like, oh, wow, you don't, all right, well, I like blueberries because of this, this, and this, and these things, then you might leave that and think, like, maybe I should go with blueberries another try. He made some good points. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like
exactly.
Inception. You're, it's
purposeful. It's just
you're trying to
figure out how to connect.
Right, but, like, I want to have conversations about, yeah, like, you know, sexuality and religion and all these things. And if I come up to you and I'm like, I mean, even my own views on a lot of those things are, I'm not exactly sure about, and they change constantly. But, you know, if I come up and say, like, basically if someone comes up and is just like, yeah, like, Jesus Christ is your Lord and Savior, and, you know, you should blah, blah, blah. Like, that's not going to convince anybody. And that's the most thing. But if you, you know, someone comes up to you and says, you know what, the giant flying spaghetti monster has just helped me in my life, and I just have found that I've gotten strength through the giant spaghetti monster and any of this. And you might think, like, oh, that's kind of silly, but I don't know, it's helped them, and that might make you, like, you know, double think this or that. Not that I'm trying to convince anyone of
the giant flying spaghetti monster.
Well, of any theological persuasion, because I just like talking about it and beliefs in general. I think that far too often it's those conversations are very, the people involved in them are goal-oriented of trying to convince you of their position, when I just think it's interesting talking about faith and religion and like, oh, wow, what do you think, and this and that. So,
and I think that comes, too, from just touring so much and getting to meet so many different people all across the country who have so many different beliefs in a huge range of things. And it's just, like, really fascinating. And I think that's opened both of us up to just being more accepting and wanting to listen more to people, which is really nice.
it's been a lot of eye-opening of, like, learning that you don't know everything.
Yeah.
And also, I think to me, especially when I was younger and very much in the religious kind of, you know, the that culture, it to me, it was like there was this thing of, like, saved people are up here. Everyone else is, like, down here. And in my mind, I didn't realize how I thought about that and how I thought, like, oh, yeah, if you're, like, it's almost like a, I mean, it sounds gross, but like a better than, but it's not, it wasn't exactly better. I don't know how to describe it. All that is to say, the combination of meeting lots of different people in lots of, I mean, some of the places that, you know, driving by, you're like, I would never set foot in that bar. And we go in there and we meet the nicest people. And you're like, oh, wow, like, this is not as sketchy. It looks sketchy. Yeah. And you might meet people who live sketchy lives, But we found that if you just treat people with respect, they often treat you with respect right back.
Yeah.
And
everybody's just trying their best in their own way.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone's just trying their best. And some people think they do the very wrong thing, but it's they think it's the right thing to do for this or that reason. And I don't know. It's just, yeah, everyone's trying their best and you should try to accept them where they are. We just like having all these conversations. And that, so circling back, trying to, you know, songwriting and stuff. Yeah. It's, I think a lot of things it's that having these thoughts and trying to explore those while also trying to, I think especially like those themes, like you're talking about, like sexuality or death or religion, is trying to explore those in ways that I feel like I haven't heard much in music before. Like, you know, I think I said this probably at the show, but like there are tons of songs about sex, but there's not many songs about being frustrated that, like, you know, feeling less than because you lost your virginity at a later date than what's normal. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, oh, well, why not try to write a song about that? And it's more of a thing too, just to try to, I think, challenge myself and also to make something that is new in the world of music, whether or not I'm, you know, doing that or not, it feels that way.
Because your albums seem to be very based on a certain topic, are you coming up thinking like, oh, this is what I want my next album to be, and then you're writing particularly for that, or are these just songs that you have that seem to just come together to fill the album?
The former, pretty resolutely. Usually,
but it's usually because you're already thinking of those things.
Yes.
They kind of, like, they feed into each other.
No, that's, yeah, very good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's usually like for our album Uncomfortably Unsure, the sexuality album, that started because we were just having conversations more about that kind of thing. It was just on my mind. I wrote a song or two about it, and then I realized, like, oh, that'd be cool if we wrote a whole album about this. And I really like doing concept albums of, like, giving myself a goal and kind of going after that. Creatively, I find that really interesting, like, giving yourself a framework and then finding the creativity within that framework. And so, yeah, it usually starts with, like, I tend to write, like, a few songs, kind of exploring a few avenues, and then there's just, like, one that I'm like, oh, that's what an album should be about. And then we just kind of head that way. I would like to, if I can, the question you asked me, I'd like to redirect that a little bit towards Elizabeth. Do you feel like you have, I don't know, like, when you're doing paintings, do you feel concept-y or, like,
sometimes
a wider goal of, like...
Yeah, not, like, really consciously, but sometimes I feel like I'll be like, oh, I'm gonna paint, you know. I think if I really think about it, I try to paint the seasons, whatever the seasons we're in. So, like, right now,
oh.
I wouldn't do any winter.
I never noticed seasons. That.
It's not, like, a big thing, but it's just, like, if I've got a few ideas bubbling around, I'll just be like, well, I'll save those more cold scenes for the colder months.
Interesting.
That kind of thing. Just to, like, and I mean, in general, I just feed off of the venues and the crowd and whatever the atmosphere of the town we happen to be in is. And so the seasons work into that.
Has the style of your art changed throughout the years? Or has it stayed relatively consistent?
It's changed.
It's gotten refined.
Yeah. I don't know, like, how directly I can describe that, but I think I've become a better painter, which is awesome.
Possible.
Yeah. Well, I think it, because I actually more recently went through and looked at, like, paintings from, like, the, like, 2010, 2011.
I feel like my colors have brightened.
Yeah.
I've just become, like, a better technical painter, which is really nice.
Subject matter has kind of remained the same.
Not entirely, but...
No,
yeah
you have, like, tangents, but
yeah.
A lot of, you know, just animals and kind of more naturistic scenes. But
yeah.
Then at the same time, you'll make, like, a house with a bunch of tentacles coming out of it.
Yeah.
Like, just weird stuff, too, so...
You have a lot of sort of not other creative endeavors, because they're tied into what you're doing else.
We do a lot of things.
You do a lot of things. I was looking at first of all, I was looking at what you're working on now, which, let me look at my notes, because there was quite a bit. Webcomic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Correct, the webcomic.
The Turing test, if
the
anyone
Turing
wants
test.
To.
I was looking at some. The coloring book, which, by the way, if you still have any,
yeah,
I need one.
Sure.
We're going to send it to the Word Barn in New Hampshire, where we were last night.
Right.
Because we were talking about it, and we were like, oh, we'll just, we're going to be there. Might as well just, you know, get
awesome.
One and send it. Obviously, the music. You guys released a single album on Patreon.
We just launched a Patreon, and as like a reward for that, it's a technically, I guess it's our newest album, but it's only exclusively through Patreon, and it's a whole bunch of songs that we sort of had left over from it's sort of a B-sides album. It's not inaccurate to call it that, but all the songs we recorded in the last like 6 months. So there are songs that we had written but had never. For like various albums, but never recorded yet.
Because so many of the albums have been concept albums, it would just be like, we have an album about sex, and this song isn't about sex. What are we going to do with it? So we put it on this album.
Yeah, it's kind of a catch-all for like a bunch of other just random songs we've had that we're still proud of. There's still tons of other songs that are crappy that we haven't released and won't release.
The C sides.
Yeah, they're like F sides. But they, this was just kind of like this collection of songs that have just been, I don't know. It's kind of like emptying the last, before we kind of move on to whatever the next album's going to be, just like getting rid of all these last odds and ends and putting them together and then having a little special thing for anyone who joins on Patreon.
I want to discuss a little bit more about Patreon.
Yeah.
In a minute. But as far as all of these other projects that you guys are working on, where does that inspiration come from? What do you decide to do versus the ideas that you decide not to pursue? Do you guys ever become overwhelmed with the extra things?
I think it just comes from a creative mindset at all times. For me personally, it's just, I can't help it to like want to be constantly doing new things. And so like, I mean, the pocket vinyl shows, the live painting, not that it's boring to me, but it's like, okay, I've got a handle on that. What else can I do that can really expand my mind and really challenge me? And so, like, I did the coloring book. Now I'm working on the webcomic that I love. We're doing a graphic novel together right now. And so for me, that's how I stay interested and fresh.
Yeah, I think it's just I actually learned from Elizabeth that she's taught me very much of, like, this idea of, like, yeah, just do it. Like, you have, like, she mentioned the graphic novel back in even a couple years before that, I had this idea for a graphic novel.
For a movie.
I thought it would be a movie. Like, oh, this fun idea. And then when we first started dating, I told Elizabeth that. And she's like, why don't we make that a graphic novel?
Because we don't have the access to make a film, but...
It's like, if I write it, she just draws it.
We can make a graphic novel at home.
And, I mean, it's... And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, what? You just draw it, and then you put it together. It's easy. it takes a lot of work, but
it's
with
the coloring book, where it's like, I feel, you know, 10 or more years ago, if you wanted to make a coloring book or anything, be like, well, I need to go talk to publishers, I need to go figure this out. And like, now we live in this age where it's just like, no, I'll just make a coloring book and I'll just print it myself and I can put it on Amazon and the world can see it. And that's something I can do. And that's so cool that I can just do that.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I feel like you really taught me how to just to say, like, okay, yeah, let's do that. Like, I mean, I got really into board games a few years ago, and then I started to have ideas for board games. He's like, yeah, try to make it. So I, like, made these prototypes, and we had one that we actually made, like, a full version of that we had at our pocket bottle table for
a
few years.
Kickstarted it, and then we actually sold it to a game company.
Yeah, there's one that I'm working on right now that I'm, as, like, part of the Patreon thing, too. I'm trying to, like, use that to try to... I don't know, find some life with that over the next year. I don't know. I take a lot of inspiration from Elizabeth of just this idea of just like, yeah, just do it. You have an idea? Great, do it. I mean, even to like the smallest things, like just a couple weeks ago, Elizabeth was like, I want popsicles. Popsicles are often filled with sugar and stuff that's just tastes good and purely bad for you. And she's like, I'm going to make popsicles myself. So when we were shopping, she just got some frozen fruit and some cranberry juice. She blended that together. We had some popsicle, like, holder make-your-own things. And you've made, like, 20 of them or something like that since we just... And every time we, like, run out, like, half hour before you guys arrived, we had some. And, yeah, and it's just, like, I would never think to myself before I was in this relationship of, like, I want a popsicle. I will make them. Like, no, you think I'm going to go buy them somewhere. And I remember one time Elizabeth was like, I want some crackers. And so she started to make her own crackers rather than the normal thing, which we were like, yeah, I have to go buy crackers. And so she just has this idea of like, yeah, well, I wonder how that's done. Maybe I'll go do that. And so, I mean, sometimes there have been projects or different ideas that we've had where, like, you know, one night you're like, oh, wouldn't that be cool if this happened? And then, like, a week later you're like, oh, no. Like, you just lose steam for it. But the projects that we do that I think reach a conclusion and get finished are ones that, for whatever reason, they just stroke that creative part of your brain that, like, as you're working on it, you just, you know.
I think it's just, like, a need to be challenged. I need to find, like, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It just, yeah. It strokes whatever that thing is that keeps you going. And you're just like, yeah, I'm going to keep following this path. So, yeah, I don't know. I just think it comes down to us just wanting to do stuff. And because of Pocket Vinyl, that kind of works now as this umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
And since we have sort of a small fan base and stuff now, almost anything we do, we can just be like, hey, you know.
What do you guys
think? Yeah, here, look, it's a thing. And then there's at least a small audience that's like, oh, that's cool. Or sometimes we're like, hey, a thing. And then just silence. And we're like, all right, well, that was that. But then we just move on. And I don't know.
Pretty much, I think the only other thing. Do you guys want to talk about the documentary?
Sure.
Okay. Then Patreon and the documentary are the last two topics. We'll sort of get through Patreon a little bit quickly, and then we'll talk about the documentary and then do.
Did you have any questions about the Patreon, or just like plugging?
Well, it was mostly, why did you choose Patreon versus another crowdfunding source?
Mm-hmm. We've done Kickstarters, and they're so stressful. And they're also for a specific project.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had quite a few artist friends who have done Patreon, and they've been encouraging us. I think the most recent one was my brother and sister-in-law both have their own Patreons for their own creative things that they do. And talking with them, it was just like, yeah, this can be a good thing. We were really hesitant about doing it for the longest time because it just feels odd.
Well, nor did we have anything that constantly came out.
Right, that's it too, because we're touring so much, it's hard to be on a schedule where you can produce something every week or every month or whatever. But we decided that with the webcomic, that's a weekly thing.
Twice a week. Yeah.
And that kind of keeps us to a schedule, and then it was a great reason to really start putting the graphic novel out there, and then this new album that we had. So yeah, we decided to give it a shot, and so far we're doing pretty good. It's just the first month.
Yeah, I think it's something
it's
that
better than I thought it was going to go.
It's kind of came into it with an experiment mindset of like, we're going to try it for a year and
mm-hmm.
see if it works out. There's also, like we've done, I'd say three or four Kickstarters
mm-hmm.
for like two for albums, one for that board game we talked about earlier. The coloring book.
Yeah.
And it's one, we don't want to feel like I'm always afraid that people might feel like we're trying to take advantage of the crowdfunding.
I just don't want to feel like we're always selling ourselves constantly. I hate feeling like everything I post on social media is like, hey, support this thing. Hey, check out this thing. Hey, look at this. I just want to. And so that the Kickstarter, that's why that's super stressful.
The time limit.
Yeah. But at the same time, we knew that with Patreon, we could produce some cool things that we wouldn't be able to without just that little bit of extra funding.
And it feels like the Patreon, like, you know, we had kind of an initial, like, hey, we're doing a Patreon and trying to get the word out about it. And now it just feels like it's like, you know what, it's on our website. There are links everywhere where we are so people can find it. And it's just kind of like you just let it be. The people who are on Patreon, you interact with them,
mm-hmm.
You know, show them cool stuff and do all that. But it doesn't, I don't feel the pressure of like, the money helps a lot. But any of the things that we're trying to do for the next year with the help of the Patreon, it's not anything that we're relying on the money for Patreon, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It all helps, but it's like we tried to make sure that there was nothing that was like, you know, we can only do this specific thing if we get, you know, this many people on Patreon or something like that. Because
we're going to do this thing anyway. if you want to be a part of it, you know, donate $1 a month or donate $3 a month and you can be a part of it as well.
Yeah, and now it just feels like it's this kind of safe, appropriate avenue where it's almost like, you know, it's we're not necessarily, at least in my mind, I hope it's not coming off as like we're asking for money, but more of just like, hey, if you want to support us and be a part of these things and see like some exclusive things and all that stuff, then you can like go through that channel. Mm-hmm. So we try to think of it as just another option in ways people can, you know, interact with us if they want. But it's, yeah.
I'm definitely getting used to it.
Yeah, it's still, again, it's been a month since we,
yeah. Not even a couple weeks.
Oh, yeah, I guess not. The Kickstarters are just like, you're just like, please give me money.
Too, if you don't make your goal, you don't get anything. Right, so it's like, you're really big, especially the last, like, week, you're really begging.
Yeah.
People to, like, just.
It feels like begging a little bit.
Yeah.
It's a great resource. And again, we've used it, like, many times, and I back a lot of things
on
Kickstarter.
And I prefer Kickstarter to, like, a GoFundMe. I think GoFundMes are great for, like, charities and stuff. Like, I'm running a GoFundMe right now for a charity summer camp that I'm working at. But Kickstarter is just like, I need, you know, $1,000 to create this thing. If I get $800, I'm not going to be able to create the thing. So I need the thousand, and that's why.
Yeah,
what
the
I like
all
or
nothing.
Yeah.
And it too, it's got the name recognition too,
sure.
As opposed to some of the others, but.
The documentary that you guys created,
mm-hmm.
We'll just sort of go through the basics. What inspired it? What was the final decision of, like, okay, we're going to do this? Did it start with you guys just reporting yourselves and then finding other people along the way? And
yeah, I think leading up to it, we'd done a few, like, for one tour, we would record ourselves and do, like, a little mini documentary. We call them pocumentaries. And we just, like, release it on YouTube and just, like, this is a fun little thing. This is what we're doing. And we got really good responses from that, with people just being like, I didn't know that this is what your life was like. And so we kind of had the idea for maybe 2 years to do the documentary. And we kept thinking like, when we have money, we'll get the equipment or we'll get, you know, whatever we need. And it came down to that thing where it's like, let's just do it. Like, we have this little video camera. We'll just do it. We'll just record stuff and see what happens. And yeah, it ended up, we recorded a lot of just other musicians' point of view. And I think for me, my main motivation was showing friends and family who just really didn't understand my life at all. Just being like, look, this is what I'm doing. This is why I'm doing it. These are some of the hardships, but also it's really worth it. And just trying to connect to people that I knew and show them what my life was like.
Well, that was to me too. I love music documentaries about like bands or something, but it's always like bands who are really famous and, you know, who are just well known. And it's like, oh, they spent, you know, like, oh, 2 whole years in the unknown and not really, you know. And it always, to me, that like first, like, you know, 20 minutes or whatever of a documentary, it seemed like it was always the most interesting. But then they like kind of go on and talk about it as they sort of gathered success. But I always liked the stories of when they were kind of pre big success. And I just never had seen a documentary like that. And I think that was an idea too that we like had, and we're like, oh yeah, wouldn't it be cool if someone made that?
And I think
Elizabeth was like, just make it.
We made
it
for, like, we do everything. We make it for how we would react to it. And so we're like, this is what I would like to see, and this is what you would like to see. But since we've released it and we've started showing it around, I've really enjoyed seeing people, like kids coming up to us and just being like, oh, I really wanted to go on tour. And now I've watched this. And now I think I will, because you've made it so accessible. Or like, there's that one older woman in, I forget, middle of nowhere.
Like, Mankato, Kansas.
Yeah. And she was just like, we turned the documentary off and she just goes, I didn't know people like you existed. Like, a lot of people just don't know that there are shows happening in your town all the time, and they're not like massive, like, stadium shows. Like, a lot of people, when they think I'm going to go see a show, they think they're going to go see like U2 or whatever. They don't realize that there are small accessible shows that they can go see all the time.
Nor do I think they know that there are people who full time do that on a small level,
like the DIY shows and stuff
And it's there's just, I don't know, just a lot of like, we felt like anytime we actually talked about our lives to people on the road, They'd just be like, oh, okay, but it's you can't describe it. And so we're like, all right, well, let's show it. And we want to, yeah, interview the other musicians and stuff. And I'm really happy how it came out.
Yeah,
and that was another thing, too, that kind of at least gave me confidence that it could happen was that, like, I took a few, like, 101 video editing classes in college, but I felt that I sort of knew, like, I felt like we knew how to tell a story. And I felt like I at least could make a movie that wasn't boring. You know what I mean? And that was, like, the goal I was really reaching for is, like, hour and a half that's not boring. And if I can do that, I think we can make it interesting. And, yeah, and then it's, you know, once you have all the footage, then it's just the long, arduous process of going through it all and trying to you know, find the through line. But, yeah, again, that was just another thing, like, we were talking about earlier where we're just like, yeah, a movie. I remember, actually, we talked about it, but I remember driving in a car. It was shortly after we released our album, Tin, in September of 2015. And I remember we were on the road, and there was a part of me that was like, I don't know, just maybe we had a bad show or something. And I was just kind of like, what can we do to just try to make stuff that's also people would be interested in and, like, get the name out there? And I was like, let's do the movie. I remember that specifically, at least for myself, of, like, making that decision.
I know we've been talking about it for a
while. Yeah, we have been.
So,
but
it, was
I,
that, it was that January after that that you started.
Yeah, all of 2000, from January 2016 to the end of that year. That's when we filmed, and then last year kind of put it together and released it. But yeah, that was another thing, too. I don't think I ever would have, if I was in a band or something without Elizabeth, I don't think I ever would have done that without Elizabeth and this mindset that she's taught me of, like, yeah, you have that idea, do it. You just need a camera and, like, the most basic of editing equipment and, like, a few couple hours of, like, watching YouTube videos if you don't know anything of, like, how to edit, and it's, you know, then you just put it together. So it's, I don't know, I think things are easier to make than people realize, especially like you were saying with the,
yeah, you just have to start.
Yeah, you just have to, that's the, like, 80% of the battle is that. I mean, even you with this, like, podcast and
yeah.
stuff, how long were you thinking about starting this until you did?
I was
0 weeks.
I was saying, well, no, I approached you about it the end of last year.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about it when I came back to Shippensburg.
Mm-hmm.
I said, this is a thing I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then other things came along, and I wasn't around as much as I thought I was going to be. And finally, when he graduated from college this year, and I was settled in Shippensburg, it's like, okay, you know, let's actually try and do this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get some interviews. Let's see what equipment we have lying around the thought lot. What equipment do you have in your bedroom?
Yeah, I think I was very much the other side of the coin in the, she said she had the idea and I went, if you promise me that you'll dedicate to it, I will do it.
Yeah.
You know, that was pretty much all I had was, you know, I will follow you around and I will be the audio engineer. As long as you tell me that you're going to do it and stick with it, I'll do it for sure.
Is it, do you guys find it, is it harder or easier than you thought it would be? Was it, like, getting over that, like, first, do you feel like it's, like, past, like, the initial hump of, like, starting it, and now you're kind of getting,
no, we're definitely still in the starting phases,
okay,
for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think we've just gotten to the point where we're happy with our sound quality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel
mm-hmm.
happier with the last couple interviews we've done with these microphones. We were using, AKG overhead drum mics, and that picked up everything, and it was driving me crazy because I could just hear everybody's mouth noises.
Yeah,
and like, not what I want. I think, you know, we're still at the point where we just talked about this today. Like, our numbers, we went from having 100 in the first day with zero following to, you know, single digit, two digit numbers, and that was really frustrating, and
yeah,
like, not bands not sharing the episodes.
I think it too, it'll teach you what you're, if you're actually passionate about it. Like, you know, if you're into some, like, a band or something because you want to, like, I don't know, hook up or something like that, or, like, find people, like, it, you're gonna really start getting wary of the shows. And, like, that's one thing that I think we've both found as we go, is there, I mean, so many times, the documentary shows a couple of them, but there are so many times when we're just like, why are we doing this? Like, what? And then for whatever reason, you feel that for, like, a while, but then it always, this thing comes back where you're like, I keep making songs. I need to meet making this. I need to get on a stage and perform. I really like doing it. I love it. And that always seems to shine through. Now, I don't know if that will always shine through with us. who knows what the future holds, but it's once you actually start doing something, and two, I probably that 100 was like,
yes, oh my gosh.
Well, right, but it's also, I bet a lot of that was like friends and family and people who, you know,
that was
you're like, hey.
Our first year, like our first tour in the summer,
yeah.
Everybody came, all of our college
yeah, all
friends,
friends,
all of our relatives, and then the next summer, not as many.
Yeah, because I think all your friends and stuff, they'll want to support you because you're friends, even
yes.
if they don't like what you're doing. And then after they like, you know, support, like after they download your first episode or come to one show, then it's kind of like for them, it's like, all right, well,
I did my part.
I did my part to help them.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's like, okay, well, now you actually have to find fans. And I think a lot of
well,
bands.
I think that's, we're like, well, I think now we have some people who do want to stick with us month to month to month, you know.
Right. Like
the,
it's changed from the just friends and family
yeah.
to like a fan base.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And it, yeah, I felt more confident in that a little bit. But at the same time, though, we'll, like, you know, if we go to a town that we played at 6 or 7 times, and usually, like, 20 or 30 people come out to see us, you know, that next time we come, I'm always like, no one's going to come. Like, I still don't, you know, I don't know. It's such a weird thing
yeah.
to...
Psychological backflips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, you'll find out pretty quick if you want to keep doing the podcast. It's like if you keep doing art and a thing when no one is paying attention, but because you feel you have to for whatever reason, I think that's the true test of whether or not you were like made for that.
Find you. Is there something in particular that's coming up that you guys want to talk about?
When is this going to be released?
We have Ottawa, and then this, so 2 weeks from now.
Yeah. 2 Wednesdays from now.
Yeah, let me look up the calendar real quick.
I mean, just...
We've got...
June 27th would be
okay.
the date.
So, I guess the most close thing would be the Rose City Arts Fest, the last day of June in Norwich,
yeah.
Connecticut. We've got, I've got an art booth there, and then we're playing at the end of the night, at the end of the day. I've got other art shows coming up.
I think the
best thing would be if you just go to pacavinyl.com, because that has all of our tour dates at the very least.
Yeah.
And then the touring test is
yeah.
the webcomic. That's the thing that we're probably pushing the most right now.
If I can interrupt you for a moment and stress how good... So the touring test, that just Elizabeth's webcomic, it's sort of about living as an artist. It's semi-autobiographical,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's amazing. And one of the best things, I have very little involvement in it, but I'm, like, very proud of it under the Pocket Vinyl umbrella type of thing.
It's my favorite project that I'm working on right now.
If you are listening to this, chances are you would enjoy the small artist and just trying to
yeah.
make it stuff. It's about touring life and all that kind of stuff.
There,
I think it's awesome.
There's
the
links
touring
to that. On PocketVinyl.com, we have our links to everything. We've got links to that. We've got links
yeah.
to my art shop and dates when I'm doing, like, art festivals and stuff, tour dates. Our Patreon link is on there. So pocketvinyl.com, and that'll have everything.
Or for, like, music, like, I mean, Spotify, iTunes. If there's a search bar on the internet and you put in the words Pocket Vinyl, something will come
yeah.
up. We're the only thing called Pocket Vinyl on the internet.
Instagram,
it's really easy
Twitter,
to find.
Facebook, all of them.
Yeah.
All right. Sounds good. Thank
so,
you guys.
Thank you for having
yeah,
us. This has been fun.
So much.
I, yeah, I appreciate it.
Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes and drop a rating if you can. And follow us on Instagram at Flatnickel Podcast to see all the behind-the-scenes goodness that we post. And we'll see you next week.